Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to episode 108 of Blue Jays Happy Hour. I'm Nick Ashbourne, joined as always by Andrew Stoughton. At a time like this, it does seem like vibe check time, which we often start with. We are recording at an odd moment because the Blue Jays game on Wednesday is going on. This is more Nick scheduling shenanigans. But let's live in a world where the Blue Jays win on Wednesday.
Was ready to live in that world on Tuesday.
Yeah, I mean, based on win probabilities, definitely. But let's live in that world, because I think that we both know what the vibe is if they find a way to lose from, at time of recording, a 6-1 lead in the seventh inning. So if they find a way to lose, that's a dark world, and we can deal with that when we come on next week. But in a world where the Blue Jays win, where are you sitting in terms of how the last little bit has gone, how things are looking heading into the deadline?
I'm feeling pretty good, to be perfectly honest. You know, the bullpen's a little gassed, obviously. They're going to have to figure something out with that. The off day will help. I think that, you know, still a reliever is in order. Plus, Chad Green is coming back. I haven't thought too hard about the roster spots. There is certainly, you know, God love Jay Jackson, what he's been doing. Maybe you have to keep him around. I mean, maybe I'm stealing a topic from earlier when I read from your schedule list. I don't, what do you call? Doesn't matter. Your rundown of things that we're going to talk about. But I think they could still use another reliever. They definitely have a spot in Mitch White where they've got to figure out something to do there, because you just can't use a guy that you don't trust. But Dodgers are a tough team. They played them well. Not like the greatest West Coast trip, but like a non-disaster West Coast trip is, I'll live with that. Feeling good.
Yeah, I think you can drill down on those individual games and see the way in which the games got away from them. Mm-hmm. And in a situation where one win, two wins could make a material difference in turn, you know, this team is very much in a playoff fight. So it's difficult to say, oh, it's not a big deal that this game they definitely should have won got away. But again, whenever we talk about things like this, there's always the flip side of it where you win a game that you probably shouldn't have won. And I don't think it's worth necessarily dwelling on. Like you said, it was the whole thing. Like, it's tough to go to Los Angeles and play the Dodgers on the road. Any kind of lengthy West Coast trip is difficult. This is there's missed opportunities, but this is not the worst iteration of what it might have been. And also, I think that the bullpen obviously has struggled in the last couple of days, but this isn't like, I don't know, 2021 when the bullpen is awful and you think, man, they just don't have the horses down there. Like, I think you have, generally speaking, good pitchers and pitchers who have performed well for much of the year, and they've encountered some struggles, but I don't know if that necessarily shakes the faith that this unit has at least most of what it takes to get it done. Like, it doesn't need a massive overhaul. It doesn't need a huge influx of talent. Although, as you say, that Mitch White roster spot's a bit of a disaster.
Yeah. I also think that, you know, well, with Green coming back, Cabrera's looked all right. Somebody at the deadline perhaps coming in. And then you maybe get a chance to be like, you know, somebody gets a neck injury and is gone for 15 days and just takes a blow and then kind of is able to rejuvenate themselves a little bit. If you feel better about the rest of the group, you can kind of maybe give guys a little more time off while you can. We're also, you know, it's easier to feel good because we're also at a spot where, you know, Aaron Judge isn't back yet for the Yankees, though they're obviously, you know, less of a factor at the moment. But Jordan Alvarez and Jose Altuve are back for the Astros very shortly, I believe, which, you know, could change the nature of the AL wildcard race. But for now, the Jays are in the driver's seat and not playing too badly. The RISP thing seems to be regressing towards the mean. And yeah, I think they're set up well to you know, cling to the third wildcard spot.
to do the thing that would be construed as a disappointment. Yeah, they are well positioned to do that. And like you said, those teams behind them could easily pick up steam. And so it's very easy to look back and be like, oh, here are some wasted opportunities when you could have hit the accelerator and put some distance and you didn't do that. So it kind of remains to be seen how costly all this stuff is. But if you said kind of going in that this is the record they're going to have on the road trip, I think you accept that. And you referenced another thing we like to start with is the old, the transaction, especially, you know, a minor one like this one. You got Genesis Cabrera as a Blue Jay. Nate Pearson has been demoted. How confident are we that that makes the bullpen better? Because that sentence alone doesn't necessarily sound great.
No, it doesn't. I mean, well, we haven't seen the walk-heavy version of Cabrera in the first two outings as much. You know, and it's really, you know, just looking at it as opposed to diving into data or anything like that. It looks like pretty good stuff. Like, he gets some movement on those pitches. He throws hard. Though I'm writing about some, you know, rumors and transaction things, not as we speak, but just before we spoke, it's not published yet. But one thing I noticed that was interesting was that his worst pitch in terms of the edge of the zone percentage against left-handers was the curveball. He hasn't thrown that yet. His worst pitch in terms of edge of the zone percentage against right-handers is the changeup. He hasn't thrown that yet as a Blue Jay, which, you know, seems ideal. You would like, you just, he has a deep arsenal. It did feel like he needed to kind of clean that up a little bit, like just on the very, very pure surface level. Like, he's like, okay, perhaps part of the reason that he struggles is he's throwing five pitches and that just makes it hard to be comfortable enough with one to throw it where you really want to. And that seems to have been like an obvious first step that they've taken, taking those away from him. Maybe that'll change, but that seems encouraging because there definitely seem to be, you know, more strikes than I anticipated in the early going from him.
Yeah, you can't be disappointed with what he's done so far as a Blue Jay. Like you referenced, that simplification is often a good thing. Like, that's often what you do when you start being a reliever in the first place, let alone kind of few years into your career as an MLB reliever. He does have some interesting stuff with, you know, the velocity is down, but it's still good. The slider being such a focal point is new, and new is always interesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, at the time of the trade, I think I tweeted that he had been the worst reliever in baseball by Fangraphs WAR over the last couple of years prior to him being acquired. And, you know, there's some element of tongue-in-cheek to that because the reality is that most guys don't, I think it was, I forget how many innings, I think it was 70 innings. Like, most guys who pitch that poorly don't get run. And he continued to get run because he's talented. So it's like, yes, the results are not good. They have not been good in the last year and a half or so. But ultimately, that's, you know, just over 70 innings. That's not a massive sample. We know how weird relief stuff is. They're betting on talent. I mean, they've done this before. You know, it's a different type of pitcher, but it kind of reminds me of the Joaquin Benoit thing, where it's like, we're going to get a reliever who's having a rough year, but we think he's talented and we're going to see what happens. And I don't think that's the worst way to go about it.
No, I mean, that's a common thing from them in all sorts of transactions, I feel, right? Like, they're always, you know, betting on the bounce back and taking the bargain price. Not in everyone, obviously, but, you know, Whit Merrifield didn't have a great year. You think about Steven Matz, you think about Taijuan Walker and Robbie Ray. You know, the list is large of guys where they're like, okay, we believe in the talent here, or we believe we can tweak something, or we see something, and sometimes they're right. So fingers crossed on this one.
Yeah, I mean, I think the flip side of it that's interesting is that Pearson is the guy, which makes sense from the old, you know, keeping the roster depth appropriate, he has options, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't know if I was ready to say, oh, this is a guy who is, you know, he was coming off a really bad outing his last time out, and the one before wasn't great either. But if you look back, he's got, you know, I think 8 scoreless appearances before that. Like, he was still, he's still throwing hard, missing bats, generally speaking, throwing strikes. He, you know, had some home run troubles, but over a short sample, I'm not sure that I really believe that that was going to be a locked and loaded issue with him. Like, his expected ERA at the time of demotion is 3.42. And, you know, with what he brings subjectively, it is odd. It's odd to see a guy who's, you know, when he's clicking, capable of playing a pretty big role for this bullpen, go down for the guy who's been, yeah, the worst reliever in baseball over the last couple of years. It's a sort of surprising move. I get it that Pearson had hit a bump in the road, but I don't know. It felt like a little bit of an overreaction to me.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a little bit surprising for sure. You know, the one outing was really bad, and they, you know, who, you never know how much, you know, truth there is. And when they're like, oh, we want him to work on some stuff, and like the, you know, you could spin it as they're being proactive about, you know, whatever they saw in that. But then also, you know, they were going to have to figure out something with, you know, in terms of how to make the numbers work. They've got, you know, everybody likes to talk about DFA and Mitch White, and everybody's right for, you know, understandable reasons, but man, they've got this far. They've gone this long down the road that, you know, just a simple DFA of Mitch White would seem to be, not ideal asset management. 'Cause if you're going to do that, you should have just done it in the first place. So somebody kind of had to go, and I, like, you know, you say he could play a big role. I think he'll still be back and will play a big role. It's just that, you know, temporarily, and because he has the option, it's, it made it a little bit easier because, you know, he's just the other guys were less able to be moved down to the minors. But, you know, it was interesting. It was a pretty quick hook for sure. For a guy, you would like to think that they could work on whatever they needed to have him work on in the big leagues, right?
Yeah, and then the other part of this is, as you alluded to, a little foreshadowing here, it's the Jay Jackson factor. Mm-hmm. Your assumption would be, kind of regardless, you got the asset management thing keeping Mitch White alive. At a certain point, that's a sunk cost. Like, at a certain point, it doesn't matter what you've done before and what you traded for him. If he's not an asset, he's not an asset.
Well, I think that certain point is Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern.
Well, yeah. So I think that, you know, it's hard to say how much the we invest in this guy is playing into the thinking now and whether maybe that should have already happened. But Jay Jackson, it's weird. He's been on the roster for a while, and it just seems like he's gone totally unnoticed because he's mainly doing mop-up duty, and, you know, he's not a name and no one expects anything from him. And then you look up and he's got 14 innings pitched. He's got one run, and he's playing a big role in some wins here. And it just seemed like everyone kind of decided that Jay Jackson was a thing all of a sudden. And I wish that I felt the same. I think that Jay Jackson personally, and maybe you disagree with this, my feeling on Jay Jackson is that basically anyone can sort of have 14 innings that are good. And this hasn't happened for the Blue Jays in a while, right? Like, if they'd had a Jay Jackson happen to them in, you know, 2021, things maybe would have gone differently for the team. But this happens all the time, like random reliever that's not necessarily more talented than anyone else just has a good run. And this is, I'm not trying to absolutely dump on him because, you know, there's no denying that he has pitched well and this is a good run that he's on and it's a good story. A guy who hasn't really logged much MLB time and still, you know, fighting in his mid-30s. Like, there's a lot to like here about the story, so I don't want to totally bury that component, but I'm not sure I'm hopping on the train, the hype train.
No, I agree. You know, I mean, like if you ask me, do I think Jay Jackson's going to pitch important innings in October? Like, no, I probably don't think that's going to happen. But you know, I think that there, you know, I haven't gone too deep under the hood with Jay Jackson, I must admit. But doing different things, you know, kind of became a different guy later in his career. I don't think it's particularly relevant that he wasn't super successful early on the last, you know, little stretch, you know, beyond where he was this year. Like, he had, I think he was really good in the minors, I believe, for Atlanta last year. Didn't really end up turning that into an opportunity. And you know, as long as he keeps missing bats and not giving up hard contact, yeah, you got to keep that run going. Yeah, full credit to him and to the Blue Jays for allowing that to happen and not sort of, you know, it would be very easy, and it is easy all the time in this sport to be like, okay, well, the bonus baby prospect guy is going to get more opportunities, but and that they sort of didn't go that way with this. You know, I kind of like it, and I'll like it for as long as it keeps working. But yeah, I wouldn't be like, well, we don't really need to trade for an elite reliever. We got Jay Jackson now. I think that would be a folly. Yeah.
0.64 ERA. Here are a couple other numbers with Jay Jackson. He's got the 0.94 BABIP right now. And also at AAA this year, he had a 6.57 ERA. So it is the, I don't know. I understand what you're getting at, but I think the counterpoint to it is the idea that the Blue Jays are in a tight playoff race today. And if you bring in, regardless of what happened with Nate Pearson his last couple outings, like, I would rather bring in Nate Pearson for an inning tomorrow, not just subjectively, not based on talent alone, but like, my belief is if we had an inning against a major league team starting in 3 seconds, that Nate Pearson's a better bet than Jay Jackson. And the consequences are pretty. I realize that the bullpen pecking order is kind of established, like, neither of them are going to be the top dog at this particular moment, but it does strike me as a little bit odd to put the belief in this player when you're playing for something pretty serious right now. And maybe that reflects their belief that there is actually something kind of wonky with Pearson now that needs to get ironed out.
Yeah, perhaps it does. But also, you know, they were talking about on the broadcast, Buck and Dan were talking about perhaps moving Danny Jansen up in the batting order, and the sense that, the idea that the hitters are the ones who really fill out the lineup because they tell you with their performance. And I think they talked about how last year Bo Bichette was down in the seventh spot for a day and hit his way back up. They told that little story. And you know, I mean, there's something to it being a meritocracy, you know, because it so often isn't. And that's sort of, you know, I'm saying this devil's advocating a bit, right? Like, I tend to agree that Nate Pearson is a better pitcher than Jay Jackson, but I got all of the time for Jay Jackson until I don't, until the BABIP goes the other way, you know,
until it triples. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? Yeah. That'll stink. And the 3-batter rule means that maybe he'll get hung out for a little longer than you want. You know, it won't be any worse than Eric Swanson the other night. So, you know, that's just, those are the things that happen and you'll have to deal with it. But, what would you miss by not, you know, continuing to see how long this goes? I think you'd miss probably some pretty good innings. He pitched well here on Wednesday.
Yep, he said there's no doubting that the results are there. So we'll see how long they continue to be there. This podcast is the last time we are going to check in prior to the trade deadline. I think the hope would be that after the trade deadline, the Blue Jays have given us something to discuss. But we, as we record, and I guess this may be different, the Jays would be 6.5 games back of the AL East. So that idea of them challenging for the AL East and that affecting the deadline, I mean, that's a wild thing. There's still a couple of days and that still could shift. My thought isn't that you're really playing for a division title if you're 6.5 games back heading into the deadline. I know that it's possible to make up that
10 games back at the start of September.
It's possible, but it's the likelihood is pretty slim. I mean, especially with the quality. It's not like the teams ahead of them are just absolute junk teams that are totally injured or something like that. Where do you feel, again, where do you feel this deadline is going as we get closer and closer to it? Personally, I just have a difficult time believing that it's going to be a massive, you know, and a massive exciting one for the Blue Jays in terms of big time ads, because unless they see that division within reach, you're not necessarily fighting for much other than to stay where you're at.
Well, and also I think mostly probably because who's this year's Juan Soto? Who, I mean, we know who that is, but who's probably not going to get moved. And I think that would be, well, we'll see, I guess, how the Jays Angels series goes. But, you know, there's no Luis Castillo this year. There's no, I just feel like the pool of available guys doesn't move the needle as much. And so that probably is going to be as much of a factor as anything. I we've seen the track record. We kind of talked about it already with the making sort of smaller bets on guys with upside. Like, that's been a way they've played it before. They've made some bigger swings, obviously. You know, Jose Berríos is the big one. We've seen maybe more in the offseason where they've targeted bigger, more, you know, higher profile players. I certainly wouldn't rule that out. I think that there's all the reason for them to do it. It's weird, like, that the next handful of games shouldn't matter that much, but when there's that little between, you know, all the teams, I think they can. You know, if you lose four straight, you have to think about where you're at a little bit differently. But yeah, I'm with you that I don't think it's going to be super, you know, super exciting for them. I think that they're definitely going to do something. They're going to, you know, they've got the Mitch White thing. They've got some bit of a number crunch that they're going to probably want to deal with to an extent. You know, they got to get Green on the 40 man. There's going to be some subtraction there, not necessarily at the big league level, but there are some interesting guys out there. And I think that, you know, we've seen in the past from Ross Atkins and this front office that, and probably they have an opportunity or a need for this more than in other years, where they will try to do some heavy lifting for the winter at this juncture, as Russ might call it, just because that takes things off their plate. And like that, I'm in the middle of writing, and I think I maybe tweeted about the Trent Thornton trade that's happened here is, you know, the guy that they get back, Mason McCoy, not on the 40 man, so that helps. A little bit of depth, who's going to go to Buffalo. And so now, you know, if you end up moving Addison Barger, David Schneider, Otto Lopez, Gavin Biggio, Santiago Espinal, you know, if you move from that pool to a couple of pieces now, you at least, you don't have to worry about getting a warm body for Buffalo. You kind of have that. And if it's not, it's just, this is a guy, it doesn't matter. I mean, every team, I guess, probably has other guys like that, but I think they're thinking those kind of steps ahead, right? And so you might see them do something like they did with Merrifield last year, which is, you know, get a guy who will help now, who is maybe a little bit, you know, not having his best season, but can stick around next year and fill a hole next year that you know you're already going to have. Well, you know, you can see the departures of Chapman and Merrifield and Kiermaier and Brandon Belt coming. So I think that's you know, probably going to be an idea, a target, something that they spend some time on, something we might hear some rumors about. Whether they actually get anything like that done, I don't know. I do think, you know, you got to upgrade the Mitch White spot, and you got to upgrade the Jordan Luplow spot, and anything beyond that is probably a good idea too. You know, you could upgrade that Espinal or Biggio spot as well. But beyond those names, like, there's not that much you can really do here, I don't think, you know.
No, as you mentioned, it is not the same crop of kind of deadline trade bait as you can get in some cases. You know, Otani is obviously his own category. That's a whole thing. I think everyone, I know that the Blue Jays have been mentioned in various kind of rumory reports as being a team that executives will look at, whatever the language is, where they're not actually in it, but they've been mentioned that they're in it. I would be absolutely shocked. I think that's just in its own category of transaction. But, you know, there's some starters available that make you better, but how much better against the cost is a little bit difficult to say. Like, those two spots, the Mitch White spot, I'm going to go on a limb here and say not hard to upgrade from. I think you can get a player pretty easily that would present an upgrade, a meaningful upgrade that wouldn't have one of the worst ERAs in franchise history.
I think you have them on your 40 man.
That's true. But, I mean, yeah. I guess it's the magnitude of the upgrade. In terms of the right-handed bat type deal, the Luplow spot, as you said, you know, there's some guys out there. I think Lane Thomas on the Nationals is an interesting kind of lefty-mashing outfielder, former Blue Jays prospect. He's someone that I kind of have an eye on. Randall Grichuk's the name that comes up a lot. I'd be surprised if they're bringing Randall Grichuk back, but that... I mean, that would be immensely funny, realistically. I think it would be very amusing to see people have hopes. I mean, because he's putting up good numbers with the Rockies too. That's a thing that happens with hitters. I don't know if people are familiar with that, but
it terrifies me because, you know, old Ross has a bit of a type, right? We've seen some Grichuk type guys. We've seen the left-handed version of him in left field right now for the Blue Jays. You know, So there might be some appeal there for him. I'm going to go out on a limb and say not so much for anybody who watched Randall Grichuk's career from the stands or on TV, but we're not making that call.
I mean, I don't know. I think he could bring up team handsomeness still. I don't think he's total. I don't think he's totally aged out of the handsome Randy era.
Hopefully, you'll have to replace Mitch White on the team handiness. Handsomeness. So
But yeah, I don't know. I know he's objectively having a good year, even if you park adjust, yada yada yada. But Atkins in the front office, they were the front office that offered him that contract, so they do like him clearly. But that would be a weird one. Tim Anderson is a name that has cropped up, but again, I don't want to be too mean spirited and say less reputable rumor mongering type of sources, but. Not a lot to those reports potentially. We'll put it that way. I can see, like, again, we've talked about they do tend to believe, I think, in this sort of change of scenery guy. Like, I think part of it is depressing the price, right? Like the guy who's absolutely smashing the ball is going to cost you more prospects than the other one. But I think they also have a belief in their kind of, I don't know, that they've got a good environment and a good culture and good coaching and that they can bring guys across and they'll perform better. And with pitching, that's definitely worked at times. With hitting, less success in terms of these mid-season acquisitions. But
two-hit wit.
Whit Merrifield was pretty good. Jonathan Villar, not great. Again, there's not a lot. Not much of a track record. So I guess the thing with Tim Anderson is if you can get him for free, sure. But he's pretty impossible to trust. I think Ben Nicholson-Smith was out poo-pooing that on X, I think we're calling it now.
Yeah.
The other day. Any other names that are kind of rattling around your skull in terms of deadline, or is that about it?
I mean, Anderson is one because he looks similar to the Merrifield situation. I mean, not as cheap this year, and his option for next year is I guess $14 million, and Merrifield's is $18 million. And at this point, I don't think either of them are worth that. But Merrifield's definitely had a better year. If he had a $14 million option, maybe there'd be some interest. I doubt.
Ooh, I wouldn't, but.
Yeah, I said no.
He's been well lately, but no.
I don't think a lot of fans would agree that not do that. I think he's played well. Cannot deny him that. I don't understand
things. You just get the best. You know what I mean? Like, they got the best of Ross Stripling, and then they let him fly. And I think that sometimes that's what you got to go. No, you got to realize, okay. This is great, but we cannot count on this, and we'll let somebody else pay for it.
That's real. That's real. But Anderson, they get a couple months of him. I think he's been hitting a little better of late, having a really terrible season. I'm more of a Teoscar guy. Obviously, I'm partial there. Who also, not an infielder, but also fits what they're looking for. Guys, right-handed bat matches lefties. We know he can do better against right-handers than he has this year. And could play more often than just be a platoon guy, which I think is kind of the piece that you're looking for.
Do you think that if Teoscar came back, there would be annoyance among the Blue Jays maintenance staff vis-a-vis cleaning up sunflowers?
Maybe.
Like, that's a whole new... It's like a 0 to 300 when you bring Teoscar in. Like, you never had to worry about a sunflower seed problem. Then next thing you know, it's an infestation.
Yeah, well, I'm willing to put their discomfort at risk. I don't know if that's the best baseball move, but that's certainly the fun move. Put it this way, between him and Randall Grichuk, one move would be more fun and more welcomed than the other. There won't be any standing ovation when Grichuk returns triumphantly to the Rogers Center.
No, there will not be. And, Teoscar, beyond vibes and the fact he's been friends with people on the team, might be a risk of too much fun based on what they're trying to build now. But he's not having a good season, but he's sort of doing a lot of the same stuff. Like, I'm looking at his expected stats. Last year's expected WOBA of 351, and this year it's 341. So, there's a little bit more strikeouts, and the home runs aren't quite where they were last year. But it's one of those situations where things are a little bit worse around the fringes, but the core of what he does, he hasn't suddenly aged out and doesn't have any power anymore or whatever. Like, I think he's fundamentally, he's still in there somewhere.
Yeah, I think it's like a 144 weighted runs created plus against left-handers, which this team could use.
Yeah, that'd play. And, you know, he wants to come back to the Blue Jays based on one vague comment of it would be cool, I think. Cause I don't know exactly what he said, but...
Bring him home. Let's go.
I mean, I wonder what the sort of historical precedent for the off-season trade followed by trade deadline, trade back. I mean, nothing is even remotely unprecedented in baseball. The history is too long, but you don't see that often, that's for sure.
And honestly, if there's any GM who, you know, loves trades more than his pride, it's Terry DePoto, right? He'll, you know, it would be like you're not getting the equivalent of Eric Swanson and Adam Mako back, but
certainly not.
You know, you're taking a hit on that one, but you're also taking a hit no matter where Oscar goes. So the man loves to transact.
He does, so. And I think that most people in the content business respect that. I don't know if his peers respect that or the fans love it, but...
the Mariners fans, I don't think.
Those of us who make content are definitely pro GMs who treat it like a video game and just spam as many trades as possible. Couple things to check in on before we get out of here. One of them is Alek Manoah. We've kind of led a lot of shows recently with Manoah check-ins, and maybe it's unfair to put every single individual start under the microscope, but that's kind of where we are with him because it's unclear what he's going to be from here on out. And this time we didn't get the, you know, triumphant might be an exaggeration in terms of characterizing his start against the Detroit Tigers, but it was a very strong start, especially in results wise, even though it was the Tigers, and that was a big part of that story is the quality of competition. Then he had a really rough start against the San Diego Padres. And then his most recent outing was, you know, it was fine, again, from a results standpoint. There's stuff to like and not like about it. What are your impressions on Manoah before I don't know, muddy the waters and or throw one way or the other?
No, I mean, I think fine is right. I mean, they, you know, it was a big step up from the previous start against the Padres, right? Like, I think, you know, that one, just the swinging strikes weren't there. The ability to put guys away wasn't there. You know, Pitching Ninja showed a clip of one of Manoah's sliders. And so, you know, that wasn't happening in the previous start. So yeah, it was, you know, I think the walks were up, right? Like, I'm trying to remember. I should just have the stuff in front of me. I'm sitting right at a computer, but, yeah, no, I think fine is a fine way to put that. You can build off that. I definitely don't feel as bad, about, you know, how the progress that he has made as I did after the Padres one.
Yeah, the walks are the negative, right? Because now in his last two outings, you're looking at a total of 9 walks. So the narrative of, okay, the stuff is diminished, but at least he kind of went back and figured out how to center himself and throw some strikes hasn't really come to pass. Like, we still have the velocity is still basically what it was. The horizontal movement on the slider, which has been kind of under the microscope all year, basically what it was. You know, 6 strikeouts. Like you said, against the Padres, it really seemed like he had nothing to finish guys off with. This was a big step forward in that regard. Mm-hmm. He had, I think it was 12 swings from the slider and 10 of them were whiffs. So that's a really encouraging sign. And
it's far better than before, yeah.
Far better than before. And I wrote a kind of a little thing about that start and how, you know, the kind of the good and bad of it. And the good with that slider is that the horizontal movement isn't there, but the vertical movement's actually better. Like, it's diving a little bit more than we've seen.
The Pitching Ninja, the GIF will attest.
Yeah, so there. I think it was particular. I don't know which one. I wasn't on Twitter at the time of the Pitching Ninja tweet in question, but if I had to guess, it would be one, or at least one of the most impressive ones came against Teoscar Hernandez, and he really kind of, it was sort of center of the zone and buried it. Close to the dirt, in the dirt even. And that is, you know, it's not the movement we're used to seeing, but it's more dramatic movement. And clearly it was having an effect on the Mariners batter. So that's something to watch as we go forward. Like, has he kind of found a way to compensate and make his slider effective like it used to be, even if it doesn't look like it used to look in terms of shape, just a different but maybe equally effective shape. We'll see how all that goes. Like, I think that when I look at that outing, sort of 5.1 innings, 3 earned runs, that's sort of my baseline expectation from Manoah start at this point.
Yeah, no, that seems reasonable. But, you know, you don't want to put too much into that different slider, the diving one. And it was, the pitching engine did have one of those ones that it caught. But yeah, I think that that's a fine enough baseline for what, you know, you want him to be the rest of the year, and then that you can, you know, you can definitely dream on more, because we've seen that, and I think that's enough. I think that's all, that's enough for him to keep his job and to keep getting run out there every fifth day. And if it goes sideways again, then that's going to be trouble, especially if they don't find more starting pitching depth at the deadline. But that's, for me, that's a risk I probably take, is not going super heavily into the starting pitching market. But but also, there may be just like so little in terms of impact bats that you choose to go that way and figure, you know, we'll outpitch him instead of trying to balance things a little bit better.
Yeah, and the price of starting pitching is always so high, right? Like, there's always teams looking for it. So if you're not the team that is the most desperate for it, then it's hard to win those bits. Like, the Blue Jays arguably don't have the most, you know, I mean, arguably might be a soft way, but they just don't. They don't have the most trade ammunition. Like, they don't have that many sort of expendable, young, controllable players for those blockbusters. They don't have that many prospects who are incredibly well regarded around the league. So it's tough. If another team really wants a certain starting pitcher, it's hard to see the Blue Jays being the guys to come out and just get the better of that. Like, this is why we're not really having the Ohtani talk, right? Like, the Blue Jays don't have the Ohtani package, really, that other teams are, if they really want that player, able to put forth. And for most starting pitchers, it's not as extreme a version of that, but there is something to it where, you know, people talk about in free agency and trades, even, there's this winner's curse where it's like, if you're the one who offered the most, whether it's money or prospects, it's, chances are you are kind of going outside the consensus and the wisdom of crowds, and there's a decent chance that you're going to be wrong. And so guys getting kind of quality starting pitchers are probably experiencing that, whereas the Blue Jays, I just don't see that happening.
No, I think that's fair. Yeah, if a team is like, oh, the Blue Jays are giving me this, another team that wants that pitcher is probably going to be able to say, well, what if we add this, then is that better? And of course it will be. You know, I mean, look, Ricky Tiedemann, we all love Ricky. Alec Manoah, why don't you trade him? There's a big trade chip.
A big trade chip, physically.
But you can get unrealistic about it. But yeah, I don't think it's worth a lot of energy into thinking about the Blue Jays and their Ohtani package, or their package for really any, you know, elite starter at this point. And hopefully, you know, maybe they'll do something there. But yeah, I think that the rotation, man, it's tough, because it's not like a world-beating rotation. But Kikuchi pitched well again. You know, Berríos, I think you feel comfortable with. You know, everybody, they've been all right. And you got Ryu and Manoah to try to figure out that fifth starter spot. I hope everybody stays healthy. I don't know what more you necessarily need, unless it's, you know, somebody to fit between Berríos and Gausman. And I don't think that that's probably out there or out there for them. So yeah, go get some bats and see what we do.
Yeah, I mean, I think they've got sort of the rotation that, and often these types of distinctions can be overstated, but I think they have the rotation that's a little bit more of a regular season rotation than a playoff rotation. Like, they have that depth and competence, but if you actually lined it up in a playoff series, and you've got, and maybe I'm being unfair to Berríos here, because he is in the middle of like a really good season, but when you line them up against some other teams, it's behind Gausman, they just don't really have the same level of impact that some other teams have. But like you say, I don't know if that level of impact is out there for them. Like, you could argue maybe a Marcus Stroman is that or whatever, but I don't see it. Like, the Ohtani package, as you say, it's hard to even conceive of or dwell on. I will say that on Fangraphs baseball podcast, Effectively Wild, they did a whole episode where they had GMs in the mix, or people pretending to be various GMs and giving their packages for Ohtani. And they sort of just mocked out the whole situation from scratch to see what might happen in terms of him getting traded. And the Blue Jays package was, you know, it was Tiedemann and Aurelvis Martinez, and I don't know who the third piece was, but it was sort of easily dismissed as not really being a proper contender. And I think that's accurate.
Well, and I also think that he's so impossible to value that, like, every package is going to be it's going to be either way too little, like way too much and way too little at the same time. Like, speaking of Fangraphs, like, they did the trade value series recently, and I think the top 50 trade value guys in baseball, and Ohtani was number 25, and they were basically just like, he should either be number one or he shouldn't be on this list. Like, 2 months of him, what do you do? I don't know how you do that, and I don't think we're going to find out, because the Angels are at least close enough on the fringes of the race. And hey, maybe they'll win some games against in their next series. I wonder who that's against. And sort of keep themselves relevant in that sense. If they were the Nationals, then yeah, they probably would have to do it, but they probably also would have done it a year and a half ago. So yeah, we probably won't find out. I don't know if we even could 2 months of that player. It's just impossible.
Yeah, I mean, and then you sit down and think about his contract, and you know, because the Blue Jays are as rich as any franchise in terms of ownership, they should be thinking about trying to make an offer for him. But I don't think anyone considers them to be top candidates or whatever. But just
well, they got an infield spot. How's Anthony Rendon at third base these days? Take that contract off their hands for, you know, you got to replace Matt Chapman.
Yeah, I mean, talk about PR disaster. Trading Ohtani in something that amounts to a salary dump, I don't think is going to go over well with the Angels fan. I mean, there's no way to trade Ohtani that's going to go over well. Like, even sort of the quote-unquote smart move for Ohtani, he's just such an insanely... He's different. He's worth more than you can quantify his on-field contribution as two players and then mash those players together and say he's worth this. But, you know, he's worth so much more than that. I think the thing that's funny about the Blue Jays and Ohtani, and yeah, we're playing in a little bit of a fictional sandbox right now, because the most likely scenario is still Ohtani just staying put and the Angels praying that they can make a run and yada yada. Like, that's the most likely scenario. But, you know, there is a world where, for instance, the Blue Jays sweep the Angels, and then maybe, a key Angels player or two gets injured in the course of that series, and the Angels come to the conclusion that, like, there's just no way to do this, and it would be irresponsible not to trade Ohtani. Again, even in that scenario, they might not come to that conclusion, but this is technically within the realm of possibility. And then the Blue Jays, by succeeding against the Angels, get Ohtani traded to the Rays or the Orioles and absolutely screw themselves. Like, the Blue Jays' wisest move, maybe, just throw some games to the Angels, make sure Ohtani stays put, because you're not getting him, so someone else getting him could be a problem for you. Realistically, they don't have games to play with, but it's a funny scenario.
It is, but also I think, you know, with Trout out, the only key Angels player who could get injured is Ohtani himself, right?
Yeah, that's true. It is it is a wild thing that the Angels have been unable to, like, they didn't even have to build a good roster. They had to build an MLB roster, and they just have not been able to do, like, just anything around these two guys would have got you where you needed to go. And I know some of their pitching has been a little bit better this year. Like, they're not as bad as they've been at times, but it is the worst kind of miracle that they've been unable to make this happen.
Yeah, real.
So if you're a Blue Jays fan and you're struggling and frustrated with this year's addition of the team, consider that you could be an Angels fan, which would have some moments, but would be just, you know, in an existential way, far more depressing than being a Blue Jays fan is.
Oh, I wrote about Scott Rolen and the 2009 era on the weekend. And yes, things could be way, way worse. Oh my God. What a disaster.
Man, you go back 5 years. I think I always think of the 2018 Blue Jays like that. You know, there was a team I was around all the time, and that was just a nightmare of a team. And you know that wasn't in too distant the past, and this has been escaped. So there's
their opening day payroll went, with 2 years of Roy Halladay left, their opening day payroll went down by, like, from 97 to 80 million. Yikes. You know, yeah, made some bad bets on the old Wells and Rios deals, and oh man, and to the you know, whatever anybody thinks of, now I'm on this tangent, but whatever anybody thinks of the job that Shapiro and Atkins have done, and Lord knows, you know, the guy they let walk, who was previously the GM, has done okay for himself. But getting the front or getting the ownership level on board, really just makes such an unbelievable difference. Like the contentious thing between the Jays and Rogers at that time, where, you know, they let Alex Rios walk, and literally the money did not go back into the team. Like, it's just like in, and it's not just it didn't go back into the team. That means that it went back into the pockets of the multi-billion dollar corporation. For just no reason, just because they were going to throw games for the next few years. It was grotesque. We are at a much better place now, no matter how bad it is.
Yeah, think about that. I mean, I don't think we skew super young demographic-wise, but if we got if we've got some young Blue Jays fans who got on board relatively recently, keep in mind that it has been much worse. And you know what? It has been much worse probably most of the time, at least since the kind of mid-90s on. So this is not a... calling this a golden age, maybe a little bit unfair, but it's a better than average age, and at least that much should be appreciated. We're going to leave you with that thought to meditate on, to end on episode 108. We appreciate you guys listening in. Whatever you want to do in terms of leaving reviews or ratings is also appreciated, and we will get back to you next week.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.